Good morning. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 9.5 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Monday, December the 10th. And it's time for our State Capitol Report with Wisconsin Public Radio State Government reporter Sean Johnson, who will bring us up to date on what's hot and what's not on the legislative agenda, and we'll answer your questions about what your lawmakers are up to. 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Sean is here every week to review the biggest news in state politics and to preview what's on tap for the coming week, and sometimes we set aside part of the hour to focus in on one particular issue that's making news. But because the legislature is in session this week, floor session tomorrow, and there are a lot of issues that will get action and others that will not, like campaign finance reform, we asked Sean to stay with us for the full hour during this State Capitol Report, and he joins us in the studio. Good morning, Sean.
Morning, Joy.
So last week we talked about how Governor Doyle had called the legislature into special session and wanted lawmakers to consider campaign finance reform. Well, it sounded good at the time.
Yeah, you know, governors can call special sessions, but they can't really force lawmakers to sit down and take a vote at a particular time. And so, you know, even supporters of campaign finance reform have said that they're not quite ready to take up the plans that the governor wants and that they need more time to iron out some of the details and hold public hearings. So that's not going to happen in 2007.
Yeah, and what's the reaction to that not happening?
Really, everybody seems to be, those who want these kinds of changes seem to be on the same page on this, that it's okay that we have this extra time to get it right. You know, in the assembly, the speaker is not a fan of some of the campaign finance changes that the governor is talking about. He doesn't like full public funding of you know, any legislative or judicial races. So he was never a big supporter of this in the first place, but he has said too that we need more time to talk about this. So, yeah, it's not going to be a very ceremonious special session this week.
Yeah. So, what about the government watchdog groups though that have been pushing and pushing and pushing for this special session?
Yeah. Yeah. Even them, they seem to be fine with this, saying, take the extra time. That's okay. You did the important thing by calling this special session. And one thing that they're looking at still, and one thing that, you know, even the governor and some of the Senate Democrats who want campaign finance changes is, what do you do with these issue ads or these ads by third parties that are basically unregulated? People can donate unlimited amounts of money and they can run it. They can have anonymous donors. They're starting to sort of dominate the tone of elections lately. And so, you know, in this extra time, advocates are going to be looking at ways you can regulate those. The Wisconsin Democracy Campaign's Mike McCabe says a recent U.S. Supreme Court ruling makes it pretty difficult, but they're still studying how to regulate these ads.
Support for NPR.
That's not Mike
That's
McCabe.
That's not Mike McCabe.
This is
something that just has to be done, no matter how long it takes, no matter how long the search continues. Eventually, the answers have to be found, because this is the loophole that has devoured our campaign finance laws. And they have made limits on campaign contributions, limits on campaign spending. All of the rules relating to election campaigns have been rendered functionally meaningless by this one loophole.
So in any case, no campaign finance reform legislation in 2007, but the legislature is hoping to take this up in January?
Yeah, you might see them start to work on this in the early part of the year, at least in the Senate, on some of these things. More funding for legislative races, judicial races, no funding, no fundraising in the budget. These are some of the other proposals that lawmakers are looking at.
The other thing that Governor Doyle was insisting on or wanting from the legislature was passing the smoking ban, the statewide smoking ban, and we learned last week that's not going to happen either.
Yeah, on Monday he made trips around the state and said, legislature, get to work on this smoking ban that applies to all restaurants and bars. And the governor said it's a matter of public health and a matter of fairness.
The bar owners in places like Madison and Appleton, I think quite correctly, point out that they're treated unfairly by what emerges as a patchwork of bans, so that if your bar happens to be located on one side of the street and there's no smoking, and the bar across the street has smoking, that's a pretty tough thing for you. And so the easiest answer to it is, to, as other states that deal with this, is when you start thinking about phase-ins and so on, I think most ultimately come to the conclusion that it's better off just having the ban, having it across the board, treating everybody fairly.
It's stalled. It's been stalled all year. The governor came out in support of this ban nearly a year ago now. But even in the Senate, where he has Democratic allies, it hasn't come up for a vote yet. And leaders there have said they want to work on a compromise. Last week, a couple of the key senators who might hash out that compromise met. Senate author Fred Risser of Madison sat down with Democrat Roger Breske to discuss the ban. And Breske is one of those who opposes an outright ban on all bars and restaurants.
I would like to see a compromise come out of our meetings. I feel there's room for an agreement without causing undue harm to small business owners who are following all the state regulations and pays his or her taxes to the state of Wisconsin.
And so that's where you have to kind of ask, is this a dead issue? Because the smoking ban supporters basically said that, this is not an issue where you can compromise, that you need to ban smoking in all bars and restaurants. And if you don't, you're going to have this patchwork. You're going to have people still unhealthy. This is not an issue where you backstep. And so if you had this compromise ban that came out of the Senate, I don't know what kind of support it would get among supporters of an outright ban. That might fail as well.
Well, if you have reaction to the stalled smoking ban legislation or campaign finance reform or other things that have happened in the state capitol last week or what's expected tomorrow, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Our guest, Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio's state government reporter. You're listening to the State Capitol Report. On the Ideas Network, I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 18 and a half minutes past 7 o'clock on this Monday, December the 10th. This is our State Capitol Report, where we review the latest developments in state government from last week and look ahead for the week to come. Our guest, Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio state government reporter. We talked about how last week Governor Doyle wanted the legislature to consider campaign finance reform this week, but that's not going to happen. The state Senate saying not ready. There's not a bill drafted yet for all of this, and also not hasn't been time for hearings on this, so that's going to be postponed until next year. Also, the smoking ban, the statewide smoking ban, is stalled right now. And we have a caller on that, Sean, so let me take that caller. David in Marion. Hi, David. You're on the air.
Good morning. My question concerning the smoking ban is, what will happen to the revenue from the increase in the tax on a package of cigarettes if the state passes a smoking ban?
Oh, so you're saying that you think that a smoking ban, people will not smoke as much. It's not, it's no smoking in bars and restaurants, David.
Oh, well,
what, any comment?
Yeah,
on...
I think it's a good question. The stated benefits of a smoking ban is that it cuts down on secondhand smoke and the harms of that. But you would presume that if you can't smoke and the people that are used to smoking in these bars and some restaurants can't smoke there now or have to go outside to smoke there now. What if that does keep, force people to quit? I think already that you're going to see the cigarette tax is something where revenues are going to spike here with this increase that lawmakers and the governor approved. They approved a dollar a pack increase in the cigarette tax in Wisconsin. But that's going to tail off as that drives people away from smoking. So, that's going to be a diminishing revenue source as time goes by anyway, and potentially a smoking ban could affect that. I can't refer to any specific studies on that, though.
Right. We talk about this so much that that sometimes I forget that we weren't very clear. The proposal is to forbid smoking in all workplaces, including bars and restaurants. And the point of contention is that some want to exempt taverns.
Right, and that's... Right. You heard mm-hmm. from Roger Bresky there earlier, Senator. He comes from a rural district where he feels like a lot of his small businesses, some of these taverns that, you know, feel like they need people, that smokers ought to be able to come there and smoke cigarettes at their place of business. And if they don't have that ability, they're going to lose business. Bresky's also a former president of the Tavern League, which has been one of the chief opponents of the governor's outright smoking ban in all bars and restaurants.
Yeah, and that increase in the cigarette tax that goes into effect on January 1.
Yeah, good question.
Yeah, I think it is going to be in January.
I think so. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, the other issue that the governor wanted the legislature to consider this week was a bill that would require insurance coverage for autism treatment. How's that one going to fare?
That's not going to happen right away. And this is something that Senate Democrats are in favor of. They put it in the they kept it in the budget that they passed out of the Senate. It's a plan that would require all insurance companies to cover autism treatment for kids. And other states have some of these mandates. Right now, this is tied up in the legislature's Joint Finance Committee, which is evenly split between 8 Republicans and 8 Democrats. So before it advances, it has to get at least some Republican support out of that committee. Otherwise, it's not going to go anywhere. So that's kind of the question mark there, is where do Republicans stand? And normally on a mandate like this for insurance companies, they're not going to be in favor of it.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk a little bit more after 7:30 about the issues that the legislature, the Senate, and the Assembly will be taking up. But let's first review a few things from the past week, including this panel, this claims board that recommended that Georgia Thompson, the state employee who was, I don't know if wrongly convicted is the right word, of the Travelgate thing, will get her legal costs paid for.
Yeah, and just to review on that, Georgia Thompson was that state employee we heard a lot about last year. She was accused of using her job as a state procurement official to basically rig a contract or steer a travel contract to one of the governor's political donors. She was, you know, went to trial, was sentenced, spent 4 months in prison. When her case was heard by an appeals panel in Chicago, they said that the evidence against her was beyond thin, and they ordered her released from prison immediately. It was just an extraordinary step, something you don't see. So she was, went from being spending 4 months in prison to out that day. And so the question has been after that, what do you do to make it right to this person? And she racked up hundreds of thousands of dollars in legal bills. Normally, the federal government would be on the hook for picking those up because this was a case brought in federal court, but they're not on the hook for this in this particular situation. So the state claims board met and recommended that the state pick up the bill for her legal costs. And her attorney, Stephen Hurley, who represented her through all this, he was happy with the decision, obviously.
I was really gratified that the state would essentially take the responsibility for this and for protecting one of its employees, and in this case, a particularly good employee who had been wronged as a result of, you know, carrying out her job duty.
So she'll have the legal bills covered. She really wasn't asking for anything else, was she?
Yeah. No, she got some back pay, mm-hmm. But this is sort of all she can do. Mm-hmm. It's going to be about $229,000 that the state, the legislature still needs to approve this, and the governor needs to sign off on it as well. But legislative leaders have said that they're on board with this, that they think this is a recommendation that makes sense. The governor said from day one that the state needs to make it right to Georgia Thompson. So this is kind of the end of the road for that case, assuming the legislature does approve these.
Yeah. There was a news conference last week from a group with the state bar that was announcing an intent to watch over the state Supreme Court election coming up this spring. What's this all about?
Yeah, it's a panel formed specifically to keep an eye on just that one race, the race between sitting Supreme Court Justice Lewis Butler And there's a couple challengers who have filed against him already. Still time for more. But it was really prompted by the way that the last race went between Justice Annette Ziegler and attorney Linda Clifford, where you saw some really, I mean, it was a pretty nasty race. And you saw some pretty nasty ads, a little more negative than I think people generally expect or hope for in a Supreme Court race.
Yeah, I'll always remember the one that compared one of the candidates to a werewolf.
Yeah, sort of howling at the moon type image in one of the ads. Mm-hmm. And so the state bar has formed a panel that's going to keep an eye on this race, going to ask judges or ask the candidates to adhere to a certain code of conduct where they won't engage in partisan attacks, where they won't knowingly misrepresent the facts about their opponents. And this panel is also going to keep an eye on ads to make sure that those ads don't get out of line, ask candidates to repudiate an ad if it does get out of line. And so you had Bar Association President Tom Basting, and he said that the last court race between Ziegler and Clifford was part of the impetus for forming that committee.
The comments that I heard and received from our members were that some of the campaign materials that were produced both by the campaigns and by third parties were demeaning to the whole concept of judicial impartiality and integrity and respect for the rule of law.
So the particular race that we're talking about, there is a primary in February for the state Supreme Court.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, primary in February. The race is on April 1st. It's, you know, with the presidential race, it's not going to get as much attention as, you know, some of the big name candidates who are coming up through Wisconsin next year. But this is somebody who sits on, you know, our high court for 10 years. And so, you know, that it's... It's an important race by all means, and it could determine the ideological balance of the court.
Well, we'll take one more call on actually the smoking ban. Someone has a question. Dennis in Minong. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Joy. The question I had was, if the governor was to get a bill that had this exemption for the taverns and restaurants, what's to say he couldn't just veto that part of the legislation?
I don't know what it would depend on what the legislation looked like. I don't think a plan like that is going to get to his desk, really. I just am not sure that the votes are there for that, but I'm mumbling here because, you know, you caught me with a good question, Dennis.
Oh, we have to look into that, Dennis, to see if the governor's veto powers would allow something like that. We're going to talk about the Frankenstein veto. There is going to be a vote coming up on that this week, and we'll talk about that in our next half hour. Sean Johnson, our guest. He is Wisconsin Public Radio state government reporter. This is our state capitol report, where we review the news of the week from the state capitol and preview the week to come. After the news, we will preview the week to come. And we'll welcome your questions and thoughts on the legislation that will be considered by the Assembly and the Senate. 1-800-642-1234 and Madison 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is our state capitol report for this Monday morning, December the 10th. Talking with Wisconsin Public Radio state government reporter Sean Johnson, who in our last half hour reviewed the news from last week. Now let's find out what the legislature will be up to this week. We found out what the legislature won't be considering and won't be voting on in this coming week, that being the smoking ban and campaign finance reform and the bill that would require insurance for autism treatment. But the Senate tomorrow, Sean, will be voting on a bill that would limit the governor's veto power, the so-called Frankenstein veto. Tell us about this.
Yeah, and we talked a little bit about the governor's veto power before the break there, but this is really focused on his veto power when it comes to the budget, and that's what you hear most about with Wisconsin governors. Is their ability to cross words and sentences out to their liking, to change the meaning of certain parts of the budget. And this is something that the governor used in the last couple budgets. One of them, a couple years ago, he transferred more than $400 million out of the state's roads funds to pay for schools. Mm-hmm. In this last budget, he used a veto to let local governments increase property taxes by more than the legislature would have allowed. So it's one of the most extensive veto powers in the country when it comes to the budget. And the plan in the legislature would prohibit governors from stitching together parts of two or more sentences to create a new sentence, mm-hmm. Which often creates a new meaning. And the Senate is basically the last major hurdle for this. And there was some question as to whether they'd take it up, because normally what kills these proposals or keeps these proposals that limit the veto power from going anywhere is that the party in the legislature, who also has somebody in the governor's office, is reluctant to give up that power. But in this case, Senate Democrats are going to allow a vote on this. Carrie Lynch is a spokeswoman for Majority Leader Russ Decker, and that's who made the call to bring this to the floor.
This bill isn't about a particular governor. This is about reform of a system. It has nothing to do with Governor Doyle, what he has or hasn't done with the veto. This is just about governors down the line.
And you know, I would assume when you bring something like this to the floor, they usually pass.
Yeah. So poor Sean has a frog in his throat,
yeah,
almost almost like my cold from a few weeks ago. But in any case, the vote is, this is a vote that will put this on a ballot. Is this a proposed constitutional
right.
amendment? Yeah.
Right.
So then we're all going to vote on this when?
Eventually, it'd be in April,
okay.
The same time we vote on the Supreme Court race. And it's got the senators are going to make a minor change to it. The way it was written, it was going to go to voters this year because they delayed it so long. It'll go before April of 2008, and the Assembly still has to sign off on that little change, too.
Yeah. Bernie in Whitewater. Hi, Bernie. You're on the air.
Hi. Good morning. I wanted to say that I hope that the vote comes to pass as far as getting rid of the Frankenstein veto. It'll be shameful on the Democrats if they don't do what's right when they have the chance to take the moral high ground on this. You know, somebody's got to step forward and throw away their political advantage and do what's right. And also wanted to comment, I heard on WPR News last week that there's a Representative Wasserman who had put a bill in committee to outlaw a plant called salvia that most of us haven't heard of. And just want to say, I can't believe as a taxpayer that this is the kind of idiocy that our representatives are spending their time putting into law. It's tragic.
Do you, thanks very much, Bernie, for the question. Yeah, there is some proposed ban on salvia. It's sold at so-called head shops.
Yeah, a certain kind of salvia, not the kind that people put in their gardens, mm-hmm. but another variety that has apparently strong hallucinogenic component to it. And you know, I know basically what Bernie knows from, you know, hearing our newscast on that. There's a public hearing on it. It's something that lawmakers are considering. You know, it seems like in the legislature, when you have these new drugs or designer drugs at the moment that come through, when somebody tries to ban them, that ban is usually successful. But at this point, this has only had a public hearing. And as Bernie said, a lot of people aren't familiar with it. I really wasn't.
Yeah. Well, maybe we'll do a talk show on that. And Bernie, you'll be happy to know that we're working on a war on drugs program for this Wednesday in the 7 o'clock hour.
Super.
All right. Thanks for calling. And I'm sorry, what did you say about the Frankenstein veto? Oh, he's gone. He liked
yeah,
the fact that this was
that
finally coming around.
It's got a yeah. The question is now, what are Democrats going to do now with their own governor would be the one that's limited. But as I said, usually when these things come up, they do pass. One thing that hasn't been mentioned too much in this debate, and this is what Democratic support or some of the Democrats who've held this up have said that they wanted to look at more closely, is this idea that putting this small limit on the, and it is a relatively small limit on the governor's veto power, is actually a bad idea, because you're basically writing into the Constitution, you're basically acknowledging that the governor does have this power. And some of the people who've tried to get rid of this power for years, mm-hmm. Fred Wade is a Madison attorney who brought this up in committee. They feel like you're affirming mm-hmm. the governor's extensive veto power if you put this before voters, because most of it's still going to be there, even if this passes before voters, the governor's still going to be able to do, some interesting word puzzles with the budget.
Yeah. Well, darned if you do, darned if you don't. The other issue that the Senate will be voting on tomorrow is this one dealing with police pay, Sean?
Yeah, and it focuses specifically on Milwaukee. There's this state law that applies only to Milwaukee that says that a policeman still gets paid after they get fired while they're appealing that firing. And there are a number of Milwaukee lawmakers and Milwaukee Mayor Tom Barrett who don't like that proposal. They want to take that away. They say that, once you're fired, you should cut off pay. And so a proposal that is going to be heard and likely passed out of the Senate tomorrow would do that, would end the pay right away. It's not a done deal, though, and this is a debate that's going to go on. And, there's a good possibility that nothing would happen on this or that nothing becomes law this session on this, because in the Assembly, Speaker Mike Hipsch and other Republican lawmakers are looking at a plan that would be a little less harsh or less concrete on some of these the cops who are fired. And it would basically say that they would have to go through a hearing before the local police and fire commission before they get their pay taken away. That would definitely come at the objection of Milwaukee lawmakers and Milwaukee Mayor Tom Barrett. But Speaker Hipsch says that police deserve that protection.
Unfortunately, I think that the mayor is in a situation where he's like, I want all or nothing. Well, whenever you want all or nothing in this line of work, it's usually nothing. And so I think that we have an opportunity here to resolve an issue that has been a serious problem in Milwaukee for quite some time. Mm-hmm. There simply needs to be recognition that if an individual is going to be fired, if their livelihood is going to be put in danger or in fact cut off, they should have the ability to appeal that decision and certainly have their day in court to appeal what it is that they've been charged with.
How unusual is this to have the Republican Assembly and the Republican Assembly Speaker on the side of the police union on an issue like this?
It is unusual, uh-huh. But it happened in the last session as well. I'm not sure how the alliances get formed on this. Normally the unions obviously are a Democratic supporter and vice versa. Mm-hmm. And I think on a lot of issues they would be. But when it comes to this, some of these Milwaukee lawmakers are angry that with the fact that their city keeps on paying some of these officers who eventually even are charged with crimes. These people keep drawing pay while they're appealing their firings. And Mayor Barrett said it had cost his city $4.5 million since 1990. I think more than $2 million in the last several years. And their argument is that we ought to be putting that money somewhere else.
Well, we will check the weather, and then we'll find out some of the things that the State Assembly will be voting on tomorrow, including this bill that names that tree in the Capitol, the Wisconsin State Christmas tree. That bill will be voted on tomorrow. A bill that dealing with emergency contraception will be on the Assembly's agenda tomorrow, and a bill that Video Competition Act, the cable franchising bill, is going to see Assembly action tomorrow. We'll talk about all of those issues and any others that you want to at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 13 minutes before 8 o'clock, coming up after 8. We'll be welcoming in the author of America the Principled, who is also a professor of business at Harvard, talking about opportunities she sees for the United States to become a can-do nation once again. We're talking with Sean Johnson for the rest of this hour. Sean, our Wisconsin Public Radio state government reporter. This is our state capitol report, where we review the news of the week from the state capitol and preview the week to come. This week, the state legislature is in session, and we've been talking about what's on the agenda for the state senate and the state assembly. And we do have a caller in Stephen Mequon who wants to follow up on that police pay issue. Sean, hi, Steve. You're on the air.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to comment on a couple of things you said. First, you you raised the issue that it's unusual. It's an unusual alliance, and it's not at all unusual. This alliance between the Republicans and the Milwaukee Police Union dates back to Tommy Thompson and Brad Nebraska, who was then head of the Milwaukee Police Union. They have been together on all kinds of issues that are solely for the benefit of the Milwaukee Police Union for years.
All right. It seemed different to me. That's all. Yeah.
I guess I just don't understand why someone didn't question Speaker Hipsch on this issue. That, you know, it sounds all nice that someone should be able to challenge their firing in court, but nobody else gets to do that. No other police officer in the state gets to do that other than Milwaukee, City of Milwaukee police officers. It just makes no sense. And I really don't understand the opposition here, other than the fact that this is this unholy alliance between the Republicans and the police union that does nothing other than benefit the City of Milwaukee police officers.
This is only Milwaukee police, Sean?
Yeah, and, you know, Steve makes a point that this is something that they've been building over time.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, it's only Milwaukee. In other cities, when you're fired, and pay is cut off, I believe.
All right, yeah. And then, and what's at issue here is that police who have been accused of wrongdoing have been fired or convicted of wrongdoing.
The chief can fire them, and while they're appealing the case,
they still get paid.
They still get paid, right, until they've exhausted their appeals.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Steve, for pointing that out. The Assembly will be voting on this burning issue of whether to rename the holiday tree. The Wisconsin State Christmas tree, and that passed by an Assembly subcommittee by a wide margin last week, didn't it, Sean?
Right, and we'll see what happens at the Assembly. I don't know. It would seem to be a popular item in that chamber. This is something that Republican lawmakers they didn't bring up a resolution to the floor for a vote, but a number of them signed a letter with this type of idea last session. So I would presume it would pass there. And what it would do is, right now there's a big tree in the middle of the state capitol. It's officially called the state holiday tree. It has been since 1985. But lawmakers want to change it back to the state Christmas tree, which it was called from 1916 to 1985. And it was changed ultimately to avoid a lawsuit on, separation of church state grounds. So we'll see that'll probably pass the Assembly. But lawmakers aren't in session again until after Christmas. So I think this could be the type of thing that gets forgotten about pretty easily when they come back into session and the tree's no longer there.
The state Senate is not going to take this up.
Right.
So,
the state Senate's not going to take it up this week.
And
this is the last time they're in session in 2007. Yeah. Once Christmas is over and the tree is gone, I don't know if people are still going to care about it as much.
Yeah, and it's the state Senate can say we're just not taking that up when they reconvene in
right.
January.
Yeah,
yeah, and you suspect that could happen.
That would be my little prediction. Yeah,
yeah. So we're not going to officially be able to call it the Wisconsin State Christmas Tree this Christmas.
Not this Christmas. Yeah. Well, you can call it, as the governor
whatever
said,
you want,
and call it whatever you want.
Yeah.
Officially, it's the holiday tree.
The State Assembly will also take up the cable franchising bill. That's the Video Competition Act that the Senate did eventually pass with a few changes that the Assembly has to consider.
Yeah, this is the final step before it gets to the governor's desk. The Senate made some changes that would... They're relatively minor changes in the grand scheme of things. They included like a $2,000 annual fee for large cable providers to help the state regulate this. But basically what the plan would do is deregulate the cable industry. And where right now you have local municipalities all enter into separate franchise agreements and negotiate separate franchise agreements with cable companies, this plan would end that, completely wipe it out, and the state would ultimately be the entity that deals with these cable and video companies. And once they apply for a franchise with the state in most cases is going to grant it. There's not much the state can do to deny a license. And then they pretty much have a license for life at that point.
So this is going to mean, presumably, the assembly, you're predicting the assembly will go along with these changes and the governor will sign this bill?
Probably, because the assembly's already passed this with a really strong majority. It went to the Senate. They made some minor changes, but it passed there with a strong majority. It has bipartisan support. The governor's spoken highly of it. Some of the critics of the plan are going to try to change it again in the assembly, likely unsuccessful because they were unsuccessful the first time around, but they want more consumer protections. They want more funding for public access channels, which under this plan, after 3 years, they're going to see some of these special fees that cities have negotiated for public access channels. Those are going to go away. You're not going to be able to charge those anymore. So those are some of the things that some of these lawmakers are going to try to add in the assembly tomorrow. But I would expect it's going to move along to the governor's desk.
Yeah, and if it all goes this way, AT&T and other phone companies or other competitors to cable companies will be able to provide this kind of cable service or a video service.
And they can now. Which is something that gets, you know, ignored a lot. This is AT&T has painted this as this consumer choice bill that
if you
pass this, you're going to have choice. AT&T can enter the marketplace right now.
But they don't want to do the local agreements.
They don't want to have to go city by city to unveil this video over internet service. So this makes it easier for them. It makes it easier for other companies, too. It's a deregulation plan. It favors private industry over sort of self-regulation over government regulation.
All right. And the other issue I see here that the assembly will vote on tomorrow is a bill dealing with emergency contraception. What's that?
Yeah. It would require hospitals to tell rape victims about emergency contraception, or otherwise known as the morning after pill, for its ability to prevent a pregnancy if taken within 72 hours of unprotected sex. Hospitals would have to tell rape victims about it, and they'd also have to offer it to them if these rape victims asked for it. Right now, that doesn't happen in all hospitals in Wisconsin. They don't have it on hand, or they don't tell rape victims about it. So this would be a mandate that they do. This passed the Senate overwhelmingly. There were only 6 votes against it. I mean, you had some pretty strong... It's been framed by some anti-abortion groups as an abortion issue, but you had some pretty strong anti-abortion lawmakers voting for it. The fact that it's coming up in the assembly is probably a good sign that it has the votes to pass. You don't usually see things like this come up if they're just going to get voted down. The question is what's it going to look like when it ultimately gets passed? Because in the assembly committee that it passed out of, some Republican lawmakers changed it to give hospitals the right to opt out of this on moral or religious grounds, or let doctors opt out of it on moral or religious grounds. Sort of, they call it a conscience clause. And so that's the plan that Assembly Republicans favor, and that's Speaker Mike Kipsch said that he supports those changes.
That, I think, gives those individuals that are in the line of work the cover to say, look, I just morally disagree with this and I'm not going to do it. But it also does provide some of the protection for those individuals that believe they need it, and those who have in a situation that require that type of emergency contraception.
Doesn't that defeat the purpose, Sean?
Yeah, I think that, and that's what you're going to hear. I mean, if this is not really a mandate on hospitals, what is it? And so supporters of this plan say that they're going to try to change it back to its original form, where you have to do it whether you like it or not. You have to tell victims about this emergency contraception, and you have to offer it if they ask for it. And so it's going to come to the floor. I mean, the way that it passed out of committee is really, technically, it's only a recommendation. The full assembly has to decide what this plan ultimately looks like. And supporters of the original plan are pretty confident that they have the votes, Democrat and Republican, to change it back into a requirement that all hospitals notify rape victims about this and dispense the emergency contraception.
Well, we have just a little more than a minute here, Sean. Anything else that either the Senate or the Assembly will be taking up tomorrow that we didn't talk about today?
There's this little bill that would keep new teenage drivers from using a cell phone behind the wheel. It would affect drivers under age 18 for the first 9 months that they hold the license. Assembly is going to take that up. That's one of those pieces of legislation that would actually, affect people's lives.
So teenagers under this bill would not be allowed to use a cell phone while driving?
It's a little technical here, but, when you're under 18 during the first 9 months that you hold a license, or a student driver.
Like the graduated thing.
So it's like a probationary license,
yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something that's actually been supported on by the state's largest doctors group. They see it as a medical issue, and I think they've highlighted studies that show that driving with a cell phone is, equivalent of driving with, a few drinks in your system.
So then after tomorrow, where the floor sessions for both the Senate and the Assembly, that's it until January?
That's it until January, yeah. And mm-hmm. then January through March, you've got several weeks in there where they could be in session. After that, they've got a couple more session days scheduled in May, but it's really more back to the districts, and you're going to see a pretty long campaign season for this legislature next year. They're going to be back in their districts quite a bit.
Well, Sean, thanks very much. We'll talk to you next week as to what happened on these bills.
Thanks, Joy.
All right. Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio State Government Reporter. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.